Cool. I met Ashley probably a month into being sober when I started coming to CA into this meeting. I remember the thing that really stuck out is when she would talk, it would really hit me home. She's somebody that I really look up to, and when she talks, I really feel like she's transmitting something, something powerful, something that I have no other explanation for other than it's God working in her life. And she reached out to me when I was newly sober, and I remember she asked me to go out and get lunch one day and share experiences, and she's someone who really just demonstrates what it's like to be a member of Cocaine Anonymous and just a good person in the program of recovery. I wasn't around for it, but I know a little bit of her story, and Ashley, someone who, so I've heard, was able to get free, truly free, sober at like 11 years. And she got truly free, and she's someone who I really look up to and has been there for me. And, you know, late at night when I'm losing my cool, she's someone who I can call and truly trust to be there. And I'm super excited to hear your story, Ashley, so come on up here.
Ashley, and I'm an alcoholic.
Ashley.
I celebrate 12 years this week. That's really cool. Considering I really didn't have a lot to do with it. Now, Patrick mentioned something very significant just a second ago. He said that I really got free at 11 years sober. How is that possible, one might ask? And how does one stay sober that long without being really free? It's another question you might ask. I spent a lot of time in the rooms. I spent a lot of times in the rooms doing a lot of things. If you've ever read the 12 and 12, it talks about being a two-stepper, step one and step 12. I spent a lot of time knowing that I was an alcoholic. I know that if I put alcohol in my body, or drugs, whatever, anything, I'm going to drink until I'm drunk, right? I'm not going to be able to control that. I also know that I don't have a choice when it comes to drinking. I knew that much coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for a long time, I was on fire. Like, I was a big book thumper. I was the kiddo at the H&I or the 12 H&Is, and I had all these sponsees, and I was running around to every single thing I could do, and they needed someone to chair. I chaired. They need someone to go to this treatment facility. I'll go, you know. And what it turns out I was doing while I was carrying truth, which was that I'm an alcoholic and I no longer suffer from an obsession with alcohol and drugs. I was carrying that, but I was also getting a hit. Every time I walked into a treatment facility and I walked out, I thought, I feel good. Right? Look at all the good I just did. Every time a woman asked me to sponsor her, I felt like I had something. Like I had done something. Like I'm great or something. And it was very subtle, y'all. It wasn't like I thought to myself, I'm great. It wasn't like that. But I spent a lot of time in these rooms doing. And not only did I carry this idea that if I just do enough, then I'll get what they're talking about here in the steps. Then I'll be free. Then I won't care what people think, or then I'll have this sense of peace and comfort, or sense of peace they talk about in the ninth step promises. But you know what happened? Then I got obsessive about my weight, and I started working out a lot, and then I had to work out. Then I got obsessive about what I wore and how I looked, and was I good enough, and how much money do I have? So then I thought, I just need to get these things and then I'll be okay. This book talks about being selfish and self-centered, and that I'm egocentric, and it's all about me, my, I. And what can I get to make me feel different? And that's how this started. I mean, as a young kid, I grew up just not far from here. And I'm a triplet. And I have an older sister. And so there were four of us kids in this house. And my parents didn't have a lot of money, right? I mean, we got everything we needed, for sure. And we were definitely not, like, poor. Lower middle class, right? But I always, out of the four kids, I always seemed to be the one that was like, well, why can't I have this? And why don't I have that? And the book says, restless, irritable, and discontented. And I was restless, irritable, and discontented. Like, why is it never good enough? My older sister looked at me one time as a teenager and she said, Ashley, you always think that we owe you something. And I began to fill that void of me, my, I need something by doing things. First it was like sports and things of that nature. And then it was stealing. I don't know how I got from sports to stealing. If you had it and I wanted it, I took it, right? And then as I got older, it progressed. Now I want other kids to like me, right? And I always hated the way I looked. I always was comparing myself to everyone else. If my outsides could just look differently, then I'll be okay. And so I would change clothes about a million times before school. And as I got older, then it was like, it was back to sports and hanging out, and then it was boys, and now I like them. And if I just thought that they liked me, I didn't even need to know if they liked me. If I just thought that someone liked me, there was a sense of peace within me. I discovered drugs and alcohol on the same night, of course. My older sister was like 18 at the time, and I was like 14 years old, 15, somewhere in there, 14. And I finally, had coaxed her into letting me hang out with her and her friends. And it was Thanksgiving, and, they had Rolling Rock, and I drank like half of one. I don't think I've drank one sense. It didn't taste good. It got hot. It was gross. I think I drank half of two, so one total, maybe. I didn't feel anything. And then they pulled out a joint. And y'all, I had seen people rolling joints in the past. I'd worked in the restaurant business, so I'd been kind of around that scene. And I remember looking at this little tiny, it was really thin. And I remember looking and going, that's not going to be enough. I mean, I had never smoked in my entire life, but I already knew that this was not going to be enough for all of us. And thus began my drug and alcohol use. It was never enough. I went from like 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds. Once I discovered, and I'm just like everyone else when it comes to drugs and alcohol. Not alcohol as much, but drugs especially, weed. I felt normal. It made all of the noise within me go away. It was a power greater than myself, and it did everything I ever wanted, and I didn't even know it. You know, and it just, I think I was 15 or 16, and by then I was, you know, I wasn't going to school much anymore, and hanging out with the older crowd, and before you know it, I'm snorting speed and K and whatever else you can, and ecstasy, whatever else you can get, I could get my hands on. I don't even know where I had the money. I always had a job. You had to have a job to do drugs at that time. I had really good work ethic at that time. I wanted money. I discovered money got me what I wanted. I bought my first car. My parents couldn't tell me what to do anymore. I was gone. I have a relationship with this man named Adam. We're on and off. When I decide we're on, we're on. When I decide we're off, we're off. I get pretty heavy into snorting cocaine on a regular basis. I don't remember if it was daily at that point, but it was pretty close to. And I was drinking daily and hanging out with people I shouldn't have been hanging out with, parts of town that I shouldn't be in. And I wasn't scared, you know. I lost my key somehow. I used to wear it on a necklace, and somehow, even wearing it on a necklace, I lost the key. And I was stuck down in Pleasant Grove looking for wet with some people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with, right? With probation in 2 days, by the way. Yeah. Because even the fear of going to jail or prison didn't matter anymore. And this is at like 16 or 17 years old, right? And it just progressively gets worse. And there are moments when I stop hanging out with people and I stop doing drugs and I just smoke pot, or the state of Texas says you can't do that anymore, so I just drink. And somewhere in there I get pregnant. I think I was a junior in high school, and me and that guy that I was on and off with, we decided that this is the first time I say, this is it. This is where I start acting like an adult and doing the right thing, and it's going to be good. And I have to say that during that time, during the pregnancy, it was good. Things were good. I graduated high school. You know, the only thing that repercussion I felt to that was I could no longer hang out with the crew, and I felt a little left out. That's about all. I graduated, and me and this man were living together and playing house, and everything was good, and my son came a little bit early, and I remember wanting to drink right after. We were going to have his baby shower. He came 2 months early, so I had the baby shower after he was born. And I remember looking at my mom, 19 years old, and I said, look, we should have beer at the baby shower. And she was like, good idea. I don't know. Thus began the last run, which would last another 3 or 4 years, with a toddler in tow, with a baby that I really, at the time, didn't care for, if I'm honest. I cared for him, but not enough to be a real mom. I, at that point, lost the power of choice in drink and use. I began to drink daily, in the morning, all day long, and I began to use intermittently, and the sprees were getting closer and closer together, because you start to get like sloppy drunk at some point, right? And drugs became more desirable because they allowed for drinking to happen. I got a DWI when I was 21 on September 11th, and outside of Abilene, Texas, and it had no depth and weight in me getting sober. During that time of probation, I was talking to someone today about this. During that time of probation, this is the last 2 years of my drinking, I went to most of my probation meetings dirty. I almost went to prison on the first probation meeting. I chewed out a cop who raided my house subsequently, not due to me. got caught with a bong, and someone took the fall for it. Smoked meth and cocaine, and snorted cocaine 2 or 3 days before a drug test. And then in the last 2 months, this week, 12 years ago, smoked Kind Bud, because I thought that was a good idea, before my last probation meeting. So I couldn't stop. With all of the fear, with all of the consequences looming, with the child, with the broken relationships, the no jobs anymore, being alone, doing everything in my own power to stop during that time, I could not stop. I would do everything that page 31 talks about. Only drinking on certain days, only using when there's enough time, only taking $20, only buying a 20, whatever. I couldn't stop. I went to rehab on September 13th of 2006. Not because I wanted to get sober, really. Well, I mean, I'd had a long run. That last week, I was stealing some kid's Adderall, and I was smoking Kind Bud, and I was intermittently drinking because I had no money, and I was mooching off of people. And I got caught in a lie by the last people that ever on earth that wanted anything to do with me. if they only knew how much I stole and how bad of a person I was, they probably wouldn't have allowed me in their home. And someone said, "You need help." And for the first time ever, I admitted out loud, "I do." And I didn't know what I was going to do. Someone suggested rehab, and I called up to ODAT in Plano. Someone answered the phone, and I said, "I need help." And they said, "Call Green Oaks." And I called Green Oaks, and I stayed there for 2 days, and they shipped me off to Homeward Bound for 2 weeks. I went to Homeward Bound for 2 weeks. That's about all I did at Homeward Bound. I went, I saw people from AA, I saw people from different groups. I didn't really do any of the work. I was not a star pupil. I was just kind of there. They told me to get up, I got up. They told me to go to bed, I went to bed. They said no smoking, and I didn't smoke. You know, like that's about what happened at Green Oaks, or at Homeward Bound. I went into sober living following that, and I really didn't get into the program or anything. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that much. But I originally went to rehab because I was scared I was going to go to prison on my last probation meeting. And someone said I need help. And I admitted that much. I went to a group. I met a sponsor. I floundered around for two months in the rooms, going to meetings 90 and 90-ish. Like 90, I'd go to two or three in one day, and then I'd take 2 or 3 days off. And then I would justify, because I did 90 in 90 days, it just didn't look like 91 a day. And I became enamored with a guy, and he said, "I know a good sponsor for you." And I was like, "Me? For me?" It had nothing to do with sponsorship. It was only because this guy had suggested that I get a sponsor, and I was like, okay. And I met this woman. I met this woman who in another fellowship in an AA group, who was 3 years sober, and I couldn't imagine being 3 years sober. And I, at this point, y'all, I knew something needed to happen. There was enough sense to know something needed to happen, because all the women I was hanging out with, and we were doing everything the same. We were living in the sober living house. We were going to 90 and 90-ish, and we were not getting sponsors, and we were doing IOP-ish. They were relapsing. And so I knew there was some, I was next. I knew that much. Even though I didn't feel like drinking, even though things were okay internally, if I be a real alcoholic and I've never drank before, and I know that what these people are saying might be true about this disease, then I might be next. And somewhere in there, this force took me into the steps. Quickly. Somewhere in there, I had this desire to not drink. And I got plugged into a group, and I started to learn about alcoholism and the nature of it. And that I didn't have a choice. I had never had a choice up to this point, so why would I now? And I got plugged in, and my sponsor said, go do this, and I went. She said, call me every day, and I called her. Even if I didn't know what I was going to say. I mean, I'm like rehearsing what I'm going to say prior to calling her. I don't even know what she wants to hear. I don't know. It feels weird. Somewhere in there, I string together some years sober. Carrying the message to Timberlawn and Homeward Bound and the 24-Hour Club and Maggie's House. Sponsoring women and taking them through the steps. And I started out this talk saying that I did all those things. And I'm not saying those things aren't bad. We each have our place, and carrying the message is important, and helping the newcomer is important, and being there when someone calls is important. But the motive behind why I did it and my understanding of why I was doing it was what matters. I wasn't relying on a power. I was relying on steps to stay sober that entire time. I didn't do this work because I knew that there was some power bigger than me that was granting me grace to stay sober. Yeah, sometimes I called it God, and sometimes I prayed to him when I was miserable enough or when I wanted something. But for the most part, I was staying sober based off of how much I did. I would say stuff like that, like, I need to do a 10-step. And I would call my sponsor and I would like vomit all over her about this problem and feel relief when I got off the phone. Right? I would do an inventory because I was so mad, but I never saw the pattern of why I did it or what caused that. And I thought, if I just do enough inventories, if I just do enough 10-steps, if I just do enough 11-step, if I just do enough 12-step, then I will get all this. I'll get that freedom they're talking about. Fast forward 9 years, and I'm doing all this, and I'm standing in the shower one day, and I'm thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I be okay? Why can't I just look or feel like those other people sitting in meetings? And I started to hear stuff and about spirituality and God, and someone looked at me and said, you don't know anything about a power greater than yourself. And I was like, I do too. I'm 9 years sober. Mind you, I was miserable, and I was asking myself when I was alone why it's not okay. And the truth is I didn't. I never relied on a power in all of this. I relied on some mechanics for a long time to get me by. I relied on working out and eating right and looking the certain way to get me by. And that began the best part of my sobriety. Now, I'd like to say I just stopped doing, but honestly, that's just the opposite of what I was doing, which was doing. And it's just not doing, but I'm still doing something. And so I didn't stop what I was doing. I don't not carry the message. I don't not sponsor women. I began to hear things like trust. Trust that this power will bring people to work with. Trust that if you don't work out, you're going to be okay. Trust that if you eat that piece of pizza, you're going to be, that sounds so simple, but I would eat a piece of pizza and I'd feel guilty. I'd wake up on Sunday and I'd be like, I need to meal prep. I need to go do that 11 step. I started to learn how to actually meditate and sit quietly. And and to carry this message because there's a power actually working in my life, and trusting that however life is looking, it's going to be, it's all right, it's already okay. I started to see some truths about myself that when I'm in fear, I immediately react. I immediately go to do something to fix it. I've never wanted to feel feelings. I've never wanted to sit with that feeling of uncomfortability. I immediately just went to, hey, what does the 10 steps say? It says we do four things. We talk to God, and I would quickly do that on my knees because I'm on fire and now I need him. And then I would call my sponsor and I would let her know just how bad it was. And then I would go help some poor soul because now I need to get out of myself, so I need you to be there so that I can do that, which is selfish. There was a selfish motive to doing these steps, which is not surprising because remember, I'm selfish and self-centered. and I have a God complex, and I think I know it all. So I started to learn about this. I started to learn about it, what it means to bring spiritual aspects into your finances or into these relationships with sponsees or family. That I don't need to immediately react when something's wrong. I can sit and be with that. I haven't gone through the steps again since then. I just have kind of stopped doing things. And like I said, when I say I don't do things, I still do things. I just don't go seek it anymore. I'm just not always out there looking to get something out of helping y'all or being of service or being a part of a group or and that main it doesn't look very different than it used to. I'll say that much. It doesn't look very different, but the motive from within is definitely not to use y'all so that I can get a hit, so that I can be okay one more day. And that was a real eye-opener to look at all the ego that and the actor that was still running the show. To see that even though I'm calling it God, I'm still just being a dope fiend and alcoholic, just now it looks really pretty. This time around, I mean, it's just really small stuff. Like today, I was really nervous about, I found out at like 10 that I was speaking. I actually kind of knew last night. Someone asked me if I was available, and I was like, oh, I'm probably going to have to speak. Okay, that's a difference. That's a real difference. That's a real difference. In years 1 through 8 or 9, I'd have been like, yeah, I'll speak. It's fine. Let me just write my name down. It's good. If anybody needs a speaker, I can do it. Why? Because I needed to. And today I was like, last night I was like, I don't really want to. But I said, I can, I will, absolutely. And I was thinking about it today and I was like, God, I'm kind of nervous. So then I was like, let me listen to some Joe Hawk stuff. And I was like, let me go do something to make this nervousness go away. And a voice inside said, is that a good idea? And I was like, yes. And then, sponsor texts me and says, what are you doing? And I was like, son of a bitch. I'm distracting. And that may seem really simple. That may seem like nothing, really. Or maybe even nitpicky. But the truth is inward, I knew that that's not what I should just be. I could be okay today. I can go do a little bit of housework or just sit. Like, I just sat for a while. Every Saturday and Sunday, oh, my God. I saw a Facebook post recently, and it was like, went to the 24-hour club, worked with a protege, had family time, did big book study. That was like just on Saturday or something like that, right? Like it was this, I would wake up at 7 and it would be like meditate and then go to the gym, then go to the grocery store and then go do this and then go do that and then a 7:30 meeting. And I couldn't just sit still. I didn't know how to just be okay and trust that whatever was supposed to appear would appear. These days, I don't really make plans unless there's a necessity for it, because stuff appears. This morning at 9, I don't know why these sponsees get up so freaking early and call me. I had 2 calls by 9:30. And I pick up. Why? I'm not doing anything. I'm drinking coffee, hanging out at the house. It's raining, right? And when I'm asked to carry the message, I go carry the message. When I'm asked to sponsor, I say absolutely. Unless it's absolutely not a fit for me. Because I'm not going to lie, y'all. I've never done heroin. I don't sponsor a lot of heroin addicts. Especially new gals. I would do them an injustice. I don't know what that's like. But I do know that I walked around in these rooms for a long time, still playing the actor. Forever trying to run the show, the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players. If only all these things would work out. If only I could do a perfect 10-step. If only I could sit in meditation long enough, or if only I had enough H&I or sponsees or whatever. And that's not the name of the game. Today it's about trusting in a power greater than myself and learning what that looks like. Right? Today it's about being of service from a place, a byproduct of having a power so that this message can be transmitted instead of just talking a lot of big book and quoting and giving off this impression that I actually have something to offer. And y'all, this isn't from me. This is because there's a power in my life that is working in and through that has allowed me to stay sober even when I got into relationships that I didn't belong in, or even when I... Why are you laughing? Yeah, even when I, you know, would change jobs just for money, or when I didn't want to pay that, you know, financial amends. That came up recently. Didn't want to pay that financial amends because it was medical and they don't go on your credit. Yeah, I know, they do. And it was just a stupid, it was just because I didn't want to give up the money, which is not mine. The money's not mine anymore, y'all. The time's not mine. This life is not mine. How it all ends is not mine. How this talk goes is not mine. I am not perfect at this at all. And I see in my life where I'm still very agnostic and I still want to control things, like with my kiddo in that relationship or with my mom in that relationship. And I can see it happening now, and that's amazing. I can see the lack of trust, and I can see that I'm not going to fix it. I just royally screw it up. My son is now 16. He has never seen his mom drunk. He's seen character defects, though. He has seen that. And I work for a company that I never... It's a good company. Trevor knows. He works for them, too. It's a good company. And I didn't do anything with that. I don't know how I landed on it. That definitely was a cool... That's a cool experience. It's all experiences, by the way. Everything we're doing, it's all an experience, and it's all coming and going, and everything's changing. And if I can just get on the ride and go with the flow and stop trying to, like, be the actor, trying to run the show, it actually works out a lot better. I don't have as many sponsees as I used to have. I'm not accumulating them anymore. What else? There's a lot more peace. And that's really cool. Because all I ever wanted was to not drink and not use and not obsess about that. And then after that, it was all I ever want is not to obsess about everything else. And I wish I could say I was really rich or something, but that's not true. My life is very extraordinary. And I get to be a part of a family and have friends and get to be a part of this fellowship. And I've since started coming into other fellowships where I get to learn how to meditate. And I didn't know that I wanted to do that. And I really, really appreciate y'all letting me come up here and speak. And I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity. And yeah, I think I'm done.